Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
He's being primaried by racism. He is being primaried by greed. He is being primaried by corruption of our politics. And we cannot let them win.
As APAC Super PAC is spending up to $17,000 an hour in an attempt to crush Jamal Bowman and be the first to unseat a member of the Progressive Squad in Congress, Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Bernie Sanders rally for him in the Bronx. We'll speak with Bowman's colleague, Congressmember Ayanna Pressler. Then, Netanyahu says the Israeli military will soon shift its focus from Gaza to Lebanon. We'll speak with Palestinian-American journalist Rami Khoury.
This is one of the most dynamic, complex moments in the modern history of the Middle East, especially on the Lebanon-Israel border. And the events taking place there now are unprecedented.
And we'll go to Gaza to speak with the award-winning Palestinian journalist and human rights advocate Maha Husseini. The International Women's Media Foundation is under fire for rescinding its Courage in Journalism award to her.
I'm so glad that both my winning the prize and its withdrawal have starkly demonstrated the extent to which Palestinian journalists are both physically and morally attacked by several parties. It shows the extent to which global media outlets and international organizations can be seen as complicit in the silencing of Palestinian journalists.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The director of ambulance and emergency services in Gaza has been killed in an Israeli airstrike on a health clinic in Gaza City. Hani al-Jafarawi, described as a pillar of Gaza's health system, is reported to be the 500th medical worker killed by Israeli forces since October 7th. His death came as Israel continues its attacks across the Gaza Strip. On Sunday, an Israeli airstrike on an UNRWA aid distribution site near Gaza City killed at least 8 Palestinians. On Saturday, the International Committee of the Red Cross reported at least 22 people died in an airstrike that also damaged the Red Cross's office in Rafah. On Sunday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the, quote, intense phase of fighting in Gaza is about to end and that some troops will be redeployed to the border near Lebanon. But Netanyahu vowed to continue the war on Gaza and rejected calls for a permanent ceasefire. Meanwhile, the aid group Save the Children is estimating over 20,000 Palestinian children have gone missing during Israel's war on Gaza, with thousands separated from relatives or buried under the rubble. This is Alexandra Saya of Save the Children.
What we know is that at least 17,000 children are estimated to be unaccompanied or separated from surviving family members, and at least 4,000 children are likely to be buried under the rubble.
In the occupied West Bank, Israel's admitted it strapped a wounded Palestinian man to the hood of an Israeli military vehicle during a raid on the city of Jenin. Relatives and neighbors of the man, Mujahed Azmi, said Israeli soldiers used him as a human shield instead of allowing him to get medical care after he'd been shot. This is 13-year-old Ala Azmi.
We told them we want an ambulance for the wounded person in the room, so the army told us to bring him to them. We got him outside, and for about an hour or half an hour, we kept asking for an ambulance. Then we called one. 15 minutes later, two jeeps came, and they got in here. The troops told us to turn around and not to look, and they put Mujahed on the jeep's hood and took him.
After video of the incident went viral, the Israeli military released a statement claiming the action was, quote, in violation of orders and standard operating procedures, unquote. The New York Times has revealed details of a secret Israeli government effort to further increase its control of the occupied West Bank. The Times reveals that on June 9th, the Israeli finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, gave a speech to a group of settlers where he outlined ways for Israel to essentially annex the area and prevent the West Bank from being part of a future Palestinian state. In Israel, as many as 150,000 protesters rallied in Tel Aviv Saturday to demand new elections and for a deal to release the remaining hostages in Gaza. Organizers say Saturday's rally may have been the largest in Israel since October 7th. This is Hadas Calderon, the mother of two children seized on October 7th and later released.
I'm here to demonstrate and ask my government and all the government in the whole world, please, please do sign the deal, sign Netanyahu deal. Just do it. Bring them back home to their children, to their parents, to their families. We are all broken and tired, and we want to make end to this tragedy.
NBC News is reporting two active-duty U.S. Air Force members are seeking conscientious objector status, saying they can no longer serve in a military that's aiding Israel's war on Gaza. One of the airmen, Larry Ebert, made headlines in April for going on a hunger strike outside the White House, where he held a sign that read, "Active-duty airman refuses to eat while Gaza starves." The other airman, Juan Betancourt, said he, too, is seeking conscientious objector status over the war on Gaza. Meanwhile, at the State Department, a senior official working on Israel and Palestine has resigned. The official, Andrew Miller, was known to be critical of the Biden administration's full-on embrace, what they call the bear hug, of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Miller cited family obligations for his departure. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant has arrived in Washington, D.C., where he's expected to meet with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and other officials. They're expected to discuss the situation in Gaza, as well as Lebanon, where fear is growing that fighting between Israel and Hezbollah could escalate, as Netanyahu says the Israeli military will soon shift its focus to Lebanon. U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres spoke Friday.
Let's be clear. The people of the region and the people of the world cannot afford Lebanon to become another Gaza.
Officials in Saudi Arabia have confirmed at least 1,300 people died in the extreme heat during this year's Hajj pilgrimage. Temperatures at times reached as high as 125 degrees Fahrenheit. The Washington Post reports more than 1,400 temperature records were broken across the globe over the past week, including many here in the United States, where an early season heat wave scorched the East Coast and Midwest. 3 days of mourning have been declared in the Russian Republic of Dagestan after gunmen attacked two Orthodox churches, a synagogue, and a police post Sunday. Authorities say 15 police officers and four civilians, including a priest, were killed in the coordinated attack. Police reportedly killed at least five of the attackers. A motive has not yet been determined. Russia launched another wave of attacks Saturday on Ukraine's power infrastructure. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky recently said Russian attacks have destroyed about half of Ukraine's electricity generating capacity in recent months. Meanwhile, a Ukrainian attack killed five people, including three children, in Russian-occupied Crimea on Sunday. Russia accused Ukraine of using U.S.-supplied missiles in the attack. Kenyan President William Ruto has said he plans to engage protesters in conversation after a week of demonstrations against proposed tax hikes and one day ahead of a possible national strike Tuesday. At least two young protesters have been killed, 21-year-old Evans Karatu and 29-year-old Rex Kanyike. Rex's mother decried the violent police response to the peaceful demonstrations.
If someone is fighting for their rights, why use live bullets? If he would have been found with any weapons, we would have said he is undisciplined. But he was walking with his friend.
Over 200 people were injured in the Kenyan protest, another 100 arrested. The Italian Coast Guard said Friday it recovered another 14 bodies of asylum seekers from a shipwreck earlier last week, bringing the confirmed death toll to 34. Dozens more are missing and fear dead. The boat had departed from Turkey with roughly 75 people from Iran, Syria, and Iraq. 11 passengers survived. The UN says an average of 5 people per day have died this year while attempting to cross the Mediterranean, as aid groups warn deaths will continue due to Europe's harsh crackdown on migrants. In South Korea, at least 22 workers are dead after a fire broke out at a lithium battery plant operated by RSL. Firefighters say exploding battery cells set off the fire. Authorities have advised nearby residents to stay indoors with their windows shut to minimize inhaling smoke from the blaze. In an 8-1 ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld a federal law that makes it a crime for people under domestic violence restraining orders to have guns. Justice Clarence Thomas cast the sole dissent. In other gun news, the death toll from a mass shooting at a grocery store in Fordyce, Arkansas, Friday has risen to 4. At least 10 people were injured. The dead include a 23-year-old nurse who was shot as she was treating another victim. The mass shooting was carried out by a gunman armed with a pistol, a 12-gauge shotgun, and dozens of extra rounds. Meanwhile, in Pittsburgh, members of the Tree Life Synagogue broke ground on a new building and memorial at the site of the 2018 mass shooting when a gunman killed 11 worshipers in the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. In election news, the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee raised $141 million in May, far more than the $85 million raised for President Biden. The Trump fundraising soared after he was convicted in New York on 34 felony counts in his hush money and election interference trial. In addition, the billionaire right-wing donor Timothy Mellon gave a separate $50 million to a pro-Trump super PAC. Mellon donated another $25 million to Trump over the past year, as well as $25 million to the campaign of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Trump and Biden are preparing for their first debate on Thursday in Atlanta on CNN. In media news, a British editor who was tapped for a top position at The Washington Post will no longer take the post as outcry continues to mount over a plan to shake up The Washington Post newsroom. The editor, Robert Winnett, will now stay at The Daily Telegraph in Britain instead of coming to the Post. The decision comes days after it was revealed Winnett had a history of using fraudulently obtained phone and company records and newspaper articles. The Post chief executive, Will Lewis, is also coming under scrutiny over his record. Both Lewis and Winnett are veterans of British papers owned by Rupert Murdoch. Last week, The Guardian revealed Lewis advised then-UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and top officials to clean up their phones amid public uproar over government violations of COVID safety precautions in what became known as Partygate. Lewis has also been accused of trying to suppress stories about his connection to the phone hacking scandal at Rupert Murdoch's News of the World newspaper in Britain. Last week, the owner of The Washington Post, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, voiced support for Lewis. And in Texas, a woman's been charged with attempted murder for attempting to drown a 3-year-old Palestinian girl at a swimming pool at an apartment complex. The Texas chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, is now calling for hate crime charges against the woman, Elizabeth Wolf, who reportedly attacked the child after telling the girl's mother she wasn't really American. In a statement, the girl's mother said, quote, "We are American citizens originally from Palestine, and I don't know where to go to feel safe with my kids. My country is facing a war, and we are facing that hate here," unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As temperatures soared this weekend, a hotly contested election drew people to a get-out-the-vote rally in the Bronx for Democratic Congressmember Jamal Bowman, who's facing the most expensive primary race in U.S. history in New York's 16th congressional district. The primary is Tuesday. The race is making clear the powerful role of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, in Democratic primary politics. The group's super PAC is spending up to $17,000 an hour in its attempt to crush Bowman and be the first to unseat a member of the progressive squad in Congress. Congressmember Bowman is a former Bronx middle school principal, one of the first to call for a ceasefire in Gaza in Congress in October. His challenger is former corporate executive George Latimer, who was encouraged to run by the Democratic Majority for Israel PAC. Outside spending in the race has topped $23 million, much of it from pro-Israel groups like AIPAC and its super PAC called the United Democracy Project, which has spent $14.5 million alone on this race so far. Squad member and fellow New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was among the headliners supporting Bowman on Saturday at a rally in the Bronx.
And I want to tell you why he's under attack. We do have his back, don't we? He is under absolute attack, not just from these big lobbies and not just from big money, but from the underlying forces that have been trying to decimate our community for decades. For decades. He is being primaried by racism. He is being primaried by greed. He is being primaried by corruption of our politics. And we cannot let them win.
That was New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking at Saturday's Get Out the Vote rally for her fellow squad member, as they're called, Jamal Bowman, congressmember from Westchester. She was joined by independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont.
District 16, Bronx, New York, most important in American history? Really? Yes, really. Because this election is not about Jamal versus Mr. Latimer. This election is about whether or not the billionaire class and the oligarchs will control the United States government. And our view is, no, they won't.
Saturday's rally drew a counter-protest from the pro-Palestinian group Within Our Lifetime against Senator Sanders and Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for their endorsement, they said, of President Biden and his ongoing support for Israel's war on Gaza. During the rally, Congressmember Bowman did not back down from support for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza.
AIPAC is scared to death. That is why they are spending record amounts of money in this race, because they are afraid. They have already lost, because the district, the American people, and the world are with us. They are in this race because we call for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. Keep calling for a permanent ceasefire. Ceasefire now! Ceasefire now! Ceasefire now! Ceasefire now! Ceasefire now!
Congressmember Bowman is running against Westchester County Executive George Latimer. For more, we're joined by Bowman's colleague, Congressmember Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, who's in New York to campaign in Bowman's district ahead of the primary election tomorrow. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Congressmember Pressley. If you can talk about this history-making race, every record is being shattered by AIPAC and other allied groups, their super PAC. Up to $17,000 an hour is being spent in this single primary race. Can you talk about what's happening?
Well, honestly, I think it is a testament to the impact of Jamal Bowman and the impact and the growing power and influence of a multi-generational, multiracial, progressive movement in this country. So this is a backlash. Jamal Bowman has taken many strong progressive stances informed by his morals, informed by his belief that we are one human family and that our destinies are truly tied. Our destinies are tied from Massachusetts to New York, from Gaza to Haiti. Jamal Bowman is an incredible educator, advocate, an effective legislator, a valued member of our Democratic caucus. And, you know, I'm here because organized people always beats organized money. And we are not new. I mean, look at the victory that we made possible in Pennsylvania. Organized people always beats organized money. And this effort to attempt to buy this seat and to silence Jamal Bowman and this broader progressive movement of which he is a leader in, we won't stand for it. And I've been here since yesterday. I was in faith houses, festivals, small businesses. I was very heartened by the momentum and the number of people that I met who are very clear about what's at stake here. Many of them had already voted early. They know that Jamal Bowman is the pro-peace, pro-humanity, pro-justice candidate. They know that Jamal Bowman is the only one advocating and doing the work of peace from New York 16th all the way to Palestine, and understands the trauma of state-sanctioned violence by a militarized police force here, and wants to make sure that families impacted by the public health crisis and epidemic that is gun violence, that they get the trauma supports and the healing that they need, that our young people have trauma-informed learning communities and access to school nurses and social workers and guidance counselors, restorative justice to disrupt the school-to-prison pipeline. This is who I went to when there was a shortage of baby formula. As a father, as a family man, Jamal sees every child as his own. He sees every family as every person, as a member of his family, because he understands that we are one human family and our freedoms and our destinies are tied. We've worked together in fighting for paid leave, for rail workers, sick time leave for rail workers. This he is proven for workers' rights, for climate justice, for clean air, for drinkable water. So this backlash, this is commiserate to the impact that this unapologetic Black man, this truth teller, this educator, this advocate, this effective legislator, this is a testament to the impact that he's had and is in response to the principal stances that he has taken, which, by the way, are in alignment with New York 16. So on the ground, I'm seeing that people are very clear about what is at stake. Yesterday, we did a squad phone bank with hundreds of people from around the country. All eyes are on New York 16.
I wanted to read you something from the New York Times, Congressmember Presley. They say, Mr. Bowman accused Mr. Latimer of racism after Mr. Latimer claimed that Mr. Bowman does not mention people who are not Black or brown and suggested Mr. Bowman was more interested in representing San Francisco or Dearborn, Michigan, a predominantly Arab-American city, than his own district. Mr. Bowman called the remark an Islamophobic dog whistle. Your response, Congressmember Presley.
Well, these are predictable plays from old handbooks. What can I say? Again, it's deeply offensive. These are not just dog whistles. They're bullhorns. But it's nothing new. These are predictable plays from an old handbook. And we just have our head down. We're going to continue to organize, continue to make the case and to remind people that Jamal Bowman was decisively sent to Congress with a mandate by the people. And he has simply made good on that mandate. Jamal Bowman fights for all of the people. And I'll just say this as someone who also is a congressional first, the first person of color to represent the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in the House of Representatives. They only put charges of identity politics on women and candidates of color. Jamal Bowman is fighting for everyone. Yes, does he bring his lived experience as a Black man in America, as an educator, as a parent to this work? Of course. He represents multiple identities and he fights for everyone. I believe the people closest to the pain should be the closest to the power, driving and informing the policymaking. Jamal Bowman has been proximate to the pain. And he has brought that pain and that perspective and that of everyone in New York 16 with him to Washington and served and kept his word with the mandate that this district sent him to. So he has been decisively and duly elected. We're going to do everything to ensure that we send him back. Again, his voice is sorely needed. And what I love about Jamal is, in the process of legislating and governing, it is very easy to forget the plot. The plot is the people. Jamal Bowman has never forgotten the people. And when I was on the ground yesterday, you heard that everywhere. You heard that everywhere. They are grateful for his visibility. They are grateful for his truth telling. They are grateful for the responsiveness with constituent needs from his district office. So we're just going to keep organizing and just keep working and organizing and mobilizing and voting as if lives depend on it, because they do. Because, Amy, you know that the votes determine who's elected. Who's elected determines the policies, and the policies determine everything. The policies determine who lives, who dies, who survives, who thrives.
I wanted to go back to Saturday's Get Out the Vote rally for Congressmember Bowman. This is Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont.
And Jamal also understands that what's going on in Gaza today is totally unacceptable. Israel had the right to defend itself against a terrorist attack, but it does not have the right to go to war against the entire Palestinian people. It does not have the right to destroy or damage 70% of the housing in Gaza, virtually the entire healthcare system. Today in Gaza, pig kids have no electricity. And what's going on right now, because of the blockage of humanitarian aid, thousands and thousands of children are dealing with malnutrition and face starvation. That is not what the American people want. That is not what Democrats want. There's got to be a ceasefire now. There's got to be humanitarian aid coming in. Hostages must be free. And we need peace in that area, a two-state solution.
Congressmember Ayanna Pressley, your comments, and also the fact that although it's AIPAC that is funding this, their super PAC, this massive money campaign against Jamal Bowman, they are not, in their ads, largely raising the issue of Israel-Palestine at all. They're more focused on domestic issues here.
Well, again, Jamal Bowman is, I guess, audacious enough to call for peace and to recognize that we need a permanent ceasefire because we cannot bomb our way to peace. And again, he sees every child as his own. And as a parent, when you think about the reporting that you offered earlier about the devastating numbers of children, thousands of children, innocent children who have been murdered, it is devastating. The fact that they have, you know, wounded children, no surviving family, you know, is in and of itself an abomination. Our destinies are tied. Jamal Bowman is recognizing that and committed to peace, committed to our collective humanity, our shared liberation, and our justice. But I do want to say this. I think that has gotten enough oxygen. I'm not focused on how much money anybody's spending. I'm focused on what Jamal Bowman is focused on, which is how many people don't have enough money to pay their bills, how many people can't afford housing, how many parents worry about if their child will have access to an equitable and quality education, if they'll be safe at school, if they can grow up one day and purchase a home in the community that they were raised in. You know, these are the things that Jamal Bowman is focused on. And he recognizes, again, that our destinies are tied from Gaza to Haiti, from Massachusetts to New York. So he is doing the work, leading with love and centering the people, our shared humanity, and our collective freedoms, because our destinies are truly tied.
Which brings us...
He needs to be decisively returned.
Which brings us, Congressmember Pressley, to you being a founding member of the Congressional Task Force designed to stop Project 2025, operated out of the Heritage Foundation. You describe it as a, quote, far-right manifesto and 1,000-page blueprint for Donald Trump to seize supreme powers and radically undermine reproductive rights, LGBTQ equality, racial justice, free speech, and other democratic institutions and freedoms. Can you explain more what Project 2025 is? We're moving into the debate between Trump and Biden Thursday night. Then Democracy Now! Will be there in force in Milwaukee covering the Republican National Convention. 2 hours a day, we'll be expanding our coverage. What is Project 2025?
Well, you know, I will say this, Amy, about these extremist far-right Republicans here. You know, they always telegraph their punch. They always telegraph their harm. And right now, they are saying the quiet part out loud. Project 2025, this is a 900-plus blueprint, extreme manifesto. It's a policy.